This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane. Albert French's first novel, Billy, is set in a small, racially polarized Mississippi town in the 1930s. Billy Lee Turner, a 10-year-old black boy, is swimming in a pond on the white side of town when Laurie, a young white girl, starts a fight. Billy fights back, accidentally killing her. He's tried as an adult, convicted for murder, and is executed in the electric chair. Book reviewer Bill McKibben wrote, "Reading this slim book is like being fed intravenously. The images, taut, horrible, rush straight to your brain." Now 50 years old, first-time novelist Albert French lived through several other careers before becoming a writer. He was in the Marines for 4 years and fought in Vietnam, where he was wounded. He taught himself photography after the war and worked as a photojournalist before starting his own magazine, Pittsburgh Preview Magazine, which he published from 1981 to 1988. Let's begin with a reading from Billy. Albert French sets it up.
This is at the pond, and what had happened is that Gumpy and Billy are, you know, playing in the pond, and Laurie and Jenny see this. And they have fought now, and this is near the end of the fight. This is near the end. Billy turns over on his stomach, pushes himself up with his hands, then stands staring into Laurie's eyes before he turns and slowly begins to walk away. He brings his hand into his pocket and slides it in. His fingers grab at the slippery pocket knife. Then he slides his hand out of his pocket and brings it up in front of him. He slowly brings his other hand up to where he holds the folding knife and begins to pluck at it with his fingers until the blade pops out of the handle. "You better get out of here. You better run before I come and get you again. You hear me?" Laurie shouts at Billy as she only sees the skinny boy just walking away. Billy moves slowly. He does not run. "Damn you!" Laurie yells and runs up behind him and pushing at his back. Billy snarls over his shoulder. "You better leave me be. I killed you. I killed you. Goddamn you, nigger!" Laurie shouts and grabs Billy's back and yanks him around. Billy turns with Laurie's yanks. His right hand lunges at her. The knife blade plunges into her ribs. She gasps for air. Billy pulls the knife out and lashes with it again. The blade slices into Laurie's arm. Her mouth flies open. She screams, but only low moans come. She grabs her side, turns from Billy, and begins to stagger. Her legs are quivering. Her arms are twitching. Her hands shake and fill with blood.
And that's my guest, Albert French, reading from his novel called Billy. Well, in this story, Billy is found guilty. He's tried as an adult, and he's killed in the electric chair. It's particularly horrifying to think of children dying in an electric chair. Did you find in the research, as you said, that you did after you wrote the book, that has happened in America?
It has happened. And this is just a rough thing in my mind. I mean, as far as numbers go, the numbers I'm going to say. But we've had roughly about 126 children, 16 and younger, that have been executed by various means in this country. The youngest that I found was a 10-year-old in Louisiana, 10-year-old male. They did not even have the kid's name, but just 10 years old in Louisiana in 1858, I believe. There was another situation in Connecticut, I believe. A 12-year-old girl was executed. And these are legal executions. These are by courts. These are by rational minds that have sat and figured this thing out and have all the answers to it. This little girl was executed the latter part of 1700s. I do not remember the precise year, but I remember the date. It was December 20th, 5 days before Christmas.
Are you afraid it would happen today?
I think that it's happening now. It's not happening as in our legal system per se, but it's happening on the streets. The execution of our youth is occurring now through the drug-infested areas or whatever. And I don't have an answer for all this, but I do have one observation I think is accurate. Death is running loose on our streets. It's most recently, back in Pittsburgh, had a young cousin that was murdered. He's 22 years old. These things, this is the first that this has come into our inner circle of a family, and it had it's had its moments. You know, it's definitely had its moments.
How was your cousin murdered?
Apparently there had been a disagreement between two groups of people, and he was at his house with his girlfriend, and the other group of people came to the house, knocked on the door, had mask on, and went up and shot Omar to death while he was asleep.
Have they found the perpetrator?
Oh, they found them. They have the perpetrators. There's a hearing that they're held over for court. The system jumps in at that point.
You grew up in Pittsburgh, and did you show signs in school that you could be a writer? Did your family have lots of books around? Were there readers in your family?
Well, first of all, did I show signs? I might be right. I think I probably showed the most opposite signs to that whatsoever. I remember my grades in English were not that good, but they were compatible with the rest of the grades I made. So, No, I was not, I don't think I've ever made anything above a B.
Uh-huh.
Let's put it this way. I graduated on the lucky list.
You joined the Marines after you graduated from high school. Was the military a way to get out of Pittsburgh?
At that time, it was in 1963 or 62. We had a miniature depression there, and there was no jobs. Even the mills weren't hiring. So in that time, if you were not going to college, and college was a 2 or 3% possibility or even thought at that time, what we did was look at coming out of high school and going to the service and then coming out of there and getting a job in the mill. I mean, that was a basic thought pattern or life or future that one might have had planned.
So you thought maybe you'd make a career of the military?
I thought I would go into it, get out and get a job, some job just to make a living. So I never really thought about doing the things that I'm doing now or some of the things I've done.
Well, you did go to Vietnam. You were there in 1965. Did you go with a clear sense of your mission and purpose?
No, not at all. I went, it was early in the war, and I just went because we had orders to go, and I really didn't have a choice. I wasn't excited about going, but I really wasn't too... I guess I wanted to go in a way to challenge myself. I'd been in the Marines for about 2 years, and I just wanted to challenge myself with it. So if there was a thrust in wanting to be there or some kind of feeling, I guess that was it.
You were shot in the neck in Vietnam. When did that happen?
That was December 10th, 1965.
What happened?
Well, we were in the attack, and... we were going across the rice paddy in the attack. We were taken up the slack. Another company had landed and got really hit pretty bad. So we were called in to, we were already there, and we were called up to go through their lines and continue the attack at the end of this rice paddy. So the VC that turned out to be a North Vietnamese battalion also hooked up with the VC regiment or so. They got us pinned down the rice paddy, and they... it was a long day, and I got shot. I just got shot. I had my head up at the wrong time or so.
Do you remember getting hit?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't lose consciousness or anything like that. I mean, I was well aware of what happened. That it was happening, that it did happen, and it didn't come to any surprise. We were being shot at all morning, and bullets were flying all over the place, so it was not a surprise. When it hit, it was real hot. It was real hot. It just I started gagging and stuff like that.
Did you think you were going to die?
Yeah, sort of.
Sort of?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I sort of thought I was going to die.
What does it mean to... sort of think you're going to die?
Well, this means that you sort of think you're not going to live. I couldn't breathe, and I was gagging and stuff like that. So I thought that, it was going to be the end of things.
Were you by yourself? Was there anyone near you that could help you?
Oh, Vernon was there, but he was on the gun, and, he was firing the gun. We had an M60, and he couldn't hear me, yelling for him, and then when he did hear, he turned, and, someone came over and, had me stick my finger down inside my neck to touch on a vein or something to stop the bleeding. And then they moved on. We had to because they were in the attack. And so Vernon was a friend of mine. And Vernon went about, a little ways further. And I didn't see this, but from what I understand, the whole left side of his head went flying across the rice paddy.
As he got shot, of course.
He was dead.
Yeah. So as the group moved on, you were left there?
Yes.
What happened after that?
I stayed there. It was early in the morning. I stayed there till it got dark. And then we started pulling back. And then we waited. It was raining, and they couldn't get the choppers in, all that typical stuff. So we waited until it got dark, until they stopped shooting at us, I guess.
I'm trying to imagine what you were thinking about by yourself, with your finger into your neck to keep the blood from going out, while the war was being fought around you and your friends were dying. What were your thoughts?
My finger kept slipping. Because it was slippery inside my neck, and I wasn't certain I was getting around the right spot. As I was concerned about mostly, and then sometimes I'd stick it back in there and hit the wrong nerve or something like that. But I don't know what I was thinking. I was thinking all kinds of things. I don't know. That was a long time ago.
Well, as you're talking, I remember a quote that in a profile actually about you. You said, "I was born in Vietnam instead of dying there." Yeah. I'm trying to make the connection from what you're talking about to the statement that you were born in Vietnam.
I guess what I was referring to was, I think, the bonding that was there with the people. I think I grew up in Vietnam. I think that I became more appreciative of moments, more appreciative of days, more appreciative of people. More appreciative of honesty, more appreciative of things that are gentle. And I become less tolerant with things like ability, like accidental deaths or these senseless deaths. And it's so senseless. And so that's the feeling I think I brought home from Vietnam. That same night that... we were talking about the rice paddy. That night, when we pulled back, it was dark. That night, and I don't know where these people came from, but it's about 2 or 3 in the morning, or it was real late, there was a pitter-patter of feet, and it was running across the rice paddy, and some of our guys opened up with an automatic. And there was a little girl or a child. I later found out it was a little girl just started screaming. What she was doing there with her mother, I don't know. Perhaps they were trying to escape the battle scene and went the wrong way, I don't know. But that child cried. It could have been a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour, a lifetime, it seems like. But the only thing that filled that night was that child's screams all night. So these are things that I also brought back. I have a sensitivity towards that, and I honestly have that sensitivity towards that. I remember those times, and in a way, I think I try to govern my actions based on those times. You try to smile at people, say hi, say hello, and stuff like that.
So Billy actually has some connection to your Vietnam experience, your novel, Billy.
Oh, Billy, I think the emotions in, well, for instance, the part I just read about when Laurie was stabbed, that definitely has, I mean, I've seen that. I mean, you know, the twitching of the eyes, the gasping of breaths, and, you know, things of that nature, I've seen that. And the suddenness that something like that can create, I mean, the violence, someone's hit, someone's shot, whatever, their reactions there, it comes as a surprise, even though you're in the middle of everything. It can come as a surprise, even when I was shot. It came as a, you know, the shock that comes in there. Just so, yes, in writing Billy, the... I saw, you know, hands and people gasping of air, heard that, seeing the eyes twitching in people, so, yeah.
Well, you know, I want to talk some more, but first we have to take a short break, and my guest is Albert French, and he's just written a novel, and it's called Billy. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with novelist Albert French. So many soldiers that served in Vietnam came back traumatized and very much damaged and marked by the war. Are you saying that you weren't traumatized?
I'm saying at that time in my life, I didn't know what the word meant. There wasn't a big thing on the psychological aspect of things. Just like I said, I was hit on December 10th, and on December 24th, I was back home in Pittsburgh by way of stopping there in Philadelphia at the Naval Hospital. And then they let us go home for Christmas, and it was just, when I walked into that Naval Hospital there in Philadelphia, I still had the same clothes on. I got shot. I remember that day very, very well. They looked up like, what is this? You know, asked me where I was from. I'm trying to explain. I'm from, you know, Chulai, the bunker down around the airstrip. I guess it was trauma.
Once you came back to the States and got well again, then you taught yourself photography. And one of your first jobs was to work in a city morgue taking pictures of autopsies. Was it any different to look through a lens at a dead body than experiencing that out in Vietnam?
Seems like I can't get away from it sometimes. It was different. I mean, it's done professionally. I mean, the dissecting of the bodies and bringing out, you know, the parts and stuff like that. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's felt differently, you know. But it was, was it different? Yeah, I mean, it was sterile. It was in a hospital situation. It wasn't laid or splattered out across something with flies sticking all over the place and, you know, the stench of it.
But it seems that a camera allows you to get very close, but also that lens can be very protective, too.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. It can be protective at 12 o'clock noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then sometimes in the evenings, just like anything else, when you don't have that separation between you and what you're trying to do professionally, you don't have that separation of the thoughts can come smashing in your face.
You've worked as a photographer, and you actually... Had a magazine in Pittsburgh Preview, and now a novelist. Do you feel like you found your calling in writing?
I never really wanted to be a writer.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, I guess. I mean, I thought of it. I had, you know, some thoughts about it, but it's not a passion of mine to, you know, to do that. I think. Being a writer can be very lonely sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, doing the magazine and the newspaper, you see people, this and that. The writing, you have to shut people out. You have to close the door so that you don't take your eyes away from the page. So there's a loneliness in there.
So you're a reluctant writer?
I don't write out of enthusiasm at all. I mean, I wrote Billy, and I've said this before, I wrote Billy out of desperation. Not any enthusiasm, just desperation. Patches of Fire was done out of desperation. Holly was done out of desperation. Not enthusiasm.
So this might be the writing period of your life until the next thing?
Well, there's one or two. I want to do a few more things. I mean, I think that the intensity of it is, I guess, we come full circle because it goes back to Vietnam a little bit. The intensity of it is very drawing. I mean, I'm drawn to that, so I'm drawn to that, you know, writing that page or trying to hit the spark right on target, right as it ignites, trying to hit that spark with a word that will be able to describe that spark, to make it light up within our minds.
So in a sense, you're still writing about Vietnam, working through the emotions of Vietnam?
That was a long time ago, but the answer to your question is, it's all right. I mean, I was in Washington last week, and I went down to the wall the first time I had a chance to do that. So it's, you know, it's all right. It's not, I mean, it's Vietnam on one side, but the other side of it is just that trying to work towards a peace within myself, a peace within the things that I do. And I think that's what I'm trying to work through. Vietnam is not over with me. It will never be over, and I don't want it to be over. I don't want to forget that. I don't want to forget it. I want to remember it, but I want to remember it with the dignity that we had as kids, the ways that we were. I want to remember that with dignity to the individuals that we fought against, those, and I want to use one word, gentlemen, in that these men that we fought against, we understand each other now, and I think that there's with dignity there on that field, so the fields that we were in, although ugly but very dignified. And I want to remember it with that. You know, I want to salute it and let it go.
Well, thank you very much, Albert French, for talking with us today.
I thank you for having me.
Albert French's first novel, Billy, is published by Viking. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and this is Fresh Air.